Chapter 28. The Blood of Sotha. Under the Mountain. Whispers in the Dark. Kelenkir plunged arms, stripped of armor, deep into the chest cavity of the skinless man, the one whose uniform gave his name as M. Geraldus. Their apothecary had gone to great lengths to keep him alive for as long as possible, and he breathed still. But though his eyes were lidless and impossible to close, they looked upon distant vistas neither brother could see. There was a peace in them that Kelenvar found fascinating. Only minutes before, the man had been screaming uncontrollably. The peace of his last moments had got into his brother. Kelenkir took a deep, shuddering breath and wrenched out his hand, bringing with it the mashed remains of the man's heart. With one final clack of lipless teeth, the Sothan perished.
Kelenkir, asked Kelenvar.
His brother's eyes were closed in rapture.
Brother!
A slow grin spread over Kelenkir's face.
Death is so sweet, he said. I think I understand it better now.
Kelenvar's eyes went to the sword of plain steel locked to Kelenkir's side. He found he could not look at it for long. There was something amiss about it, a falseness to the way it caught the light that made him wary.
We are losing time, said Kelenvar.
Yes, yes, said Kelenkir absently, already selecting his next victim.
He tossed aside the carcass. The body had become a bit of meat, unrecognizable as the man it had been.
See what we do to those who will not aid us,
shouted Kelenkir. He lifted his bare, blood-soaked arms high over his head.
Tell us where the ultramarines went, and we will be merciful.
His boots squelched in bloody mud as he walked up and down the line of the Sothans. There were five remaining, kneeling at the edge of the gory clearing, a bolter to every head, forced to watch the torture and death of their fellows. Those that had shut their eyes had had them opened permanently. More than one stared unblinkingly, their cheeks tracked with blood. But they would not answer the question put to them. One was close to cracking. Governisk, his name Ribbon proclaimed. A tremble afflicted his lower lip, and as he rigidly looked forward, he could not stop his eyes dancing up to rest upon the faces of the Space Marines before he remembered his terror and snatched them away. Geraldus. Governisk. Kelenvar supposed they all had names, these feeble little people. They all had lives. He found it odd to think of them as human, or that he had been that way before his elevation. Mortal, weak, and doomed to die at the hands of the strong. He owed the Emperor that much, nothing more. He had been told, upon induction to the Legion, that the cruelties of Nostromo were not unusual in the galaxy, but that there were gentler places. That they, as Night Lords, would follow the example of the Night Haunter and strike terror into the hearts of evildoers, so that the innocent could sleep easily. There had been so many evildoers, and so few innocent. The men who had told them of this proud task and laid strictures upon their behaviour had died, one by one, to be replaced by the very creatures they were meant to oppose. All the while the Legion had been sent on mission after mission to non-compliant human worlds, or those that had been brought into the fold and subsequently rebelled. Kelenvar wondered when he had started to question. It was not a definable moment, but an accretion of doubt. He had lost count of how many people he had flayed and mutilated before the Imperial truth began to look like no truth at all. The memories of the Space Marines were eidetic, or very nearly so. But the tide of blood had been so great that he could not comprehend the enormity of what he had been ordered to do and retain his sanity. Each face he had peeled free of its skull, each babe tossed into the fires, he remembered them perfectly, individually. Their terror, their pleas, every one ignored in the pursuit of a callous, greater good. But when he tried to enumerate them, he simply could not. He could not let himself count the tormented dead. That had been the greatest lie of all. The universe was Nostromo writ large. Surviving in the stars was the same as surviving the streets of home. It made him almost nostalgic for the days he and his brother lived moment to moment and fed on the weak. So he perpetuated his tally of atrocity for survival's sake. If that had one redeeming factor, it was that he was no longer a hypocrite. His brother drew his sword, that strange gift from Scryvok, and flicked the tip across the throat of a soldier. The others flinched in horror as their comrade's hot blood sprayed over them.
You!
Kelenkir placed the sword tip against Governisk's chest. Kelenvar's sense of misgiving increased. He experienced a moment of profound vertigo where he could not tear his attention from the sword. It hummed in his brother's hand, eager for blood itself.
Speak. Tell me which tunnel the Ultramarines took, and you shall die easily. Do not, and you are next. I will begin with your left eye.
He moved his sword to hover millimeters from the soldier's face.
The pain you will experience as I pull it slowly from your face will be unbearable. If the cries of your comrades did not illustrate it adequately for you, experiencing it will.
Kelenkir put up his sword.
Varathor, a knife.
A cruelly serrated blade was pressed into his hand. The warrior behind Governisk gripped his head in crushing hands. Kelenkir came towards him. The soldier let out a series of choking sobs as the blade came closer to his face.
And now we begin, said Kelenkir.
No, mercy, please, please, shouted Governisk. The middle tunnel, they went down the middle tunnel.
He squealed pathetically. His captor released his head, and he pawed at Kelenkir's greaves with filthy hands. Kelenkir pushed him back with his foot.
Maybe I will take an eye anyway, so that I can be sure you are telling the truth.
No!
Screamed the man.
Please, please do not hurt me. I do not lie. It is the middle way, the middle way.
He collapsed forward, weeping without restraint upon Kelenkir's boot. His fellows looked sidelong at him, disgust on their faces at his craven capitulation.
Do not judge, said Kelenvar quietly. Someone always gives in the end. If he had not, it would have been you, or you, he said, pointing. Once the knives begin their work.
He looked around at the broken bodies of his own brothers, 18 of them, piled up around the edge of the clearing.
You were worthy foes, for mortals. Think on that as we send you screaming to your deaths.
Does the human speak the truth? Asked Bordan.
He does, said Kelenkir.
Then let us finish them and be on our way.
Bordan unclipped his bolter and aimed it at the man sobbing on the floor.
Not that one. He is mine, said Kelenvar.
He strode forward, pulled up the squirming man by his hair. The man gripped Kelenvar's wrist to lessen the pain, but would not look at him.
Look at me, shouted Kelenvar.
The soldier did as he was commanded. He was sobbing, snot and tears running down his face.
Your name is Governisk?
Yes, yes, Governisk, my lord.
Well, Governisk, you have our thanks for your information.
Kelenvar pushed his combat blade into the man's belly and slid it upwards. Governisk screamed loudly as he was eviscerated. Kelenvar dropped him into the mess of his own spilled guts.
A coward's reward. Kill the others cleanly.
He turned his back on the captives. The shrill cries of the Sothan irked him. His brother was examining his new sword, holding it up to the light with a look of childish wonder on his face.
Are you well, brother? Asked Kelenvar.
Four shots rang out. Brain matter and chips of bloody bone pattered against the back of his armor. Four bodies slumped into the crushed vegetation, and Governisk screamed on in agony.
I am well! I am well! Very well! Exultant! Radiant!
Kelenkir enthused. The exposed skin of his face and arms were caked in blood.
Do you see how beautiful my new sword is?
Any gift from Scrywalk should be treated with caution, said the headsman. I do not trust it. It seems uncanny.
I was inclined to the same opinion as you, brother dear, said Kelenkir.
He held the sword lightly at a low guard. Kelenvar stepped to the side. Kelenkir tracked his movement, point towards his brother.
But I have grown to like it a great deal. A simple blade, but so light and sharp. Try it.
He made no indication of holding it out to his brother, but continued to hold it as if ready to strike.
I do not wish to touch it.
He gestured at his brother's bare arms and head with his bloodied knife.
Put your armor back on. We go into the tunnels.
Ha! You are ordering me now, little brother. Things do change.
He looked at the pile of ruined meat that had been the Sothern Auxilia.
Such a conundrum. I do not need to clad my face and hands in ceramite. Victory is already ours, and we face only 100 ultramarines.
With that, he turned and clambered up the cliff face and disappeared into the middle entrance. Kelenvar cursed him inwardly.
Move out,
he ordered the others.
Should we not wait for reinforcement, headsman? They will be with us soon.
Leave a squad of 5 behind. Have them vox the others and inform where we've gone as soon as they get into range.
He looked up at the looming peak.
This war would be easier if the damned mountain held its tongue.
We are outnumbered, 41 to over 100.
Time is of greater concern than numbers, said Kelenvar. The ultramarines know something we do not, else why do they make such haste towards their own suicide? Come, this encounter has cost us far too much time. We enter the workings of the beacon now.
Darkness, more complete than any Kelenvar had ever known, embraced him, and he faltered. He, who loved the night for the safety and opportunity it brought. His brother Kelenkir moved ahead of him, alone. An ogre in the dark. He had to catch up and jogged after. His men followed. The tunnel ran straight for a long time. Kelenkir stayed always ahead of them. When they reached a branching, he moved unerringly, marching down each passageway as if he frequented them by habit. Lacking any other guidance, Kelenvar saw no reason not to follow him. The tunnel's smooth black stone carried no scratch or mark to indicate which way their foes had gone. Kelenkir's guess was as good as anyone else's. Kelenkir spoke rarely and took to humming a disturbing tune full of odd pitch changes and dissonance. At first, Kelenvar took it to be an unrelated collection of notes, a further display of madness. Over time, he noted a pattern emerging from the tune, increasing in complexity each time it repeated. That worried him more, for it was a hideous melody that did nothing for his mood. The naked sword at Kelenkir's side glinted with a leaden light from time to time, until he looked directly at it. Kelenvar had the impression the sword was taunting him, or had grown lax and allowed its true nature to be partially revealed, only growing dark when aware it was being directly observed. He could not keep his eyes from it. The presence was maddening, distracting, so arresting it began to overwhelm his perceptions of his brother, as if Kelenkir was carried by the sword and not vice versa. An unwelcome tone came into Kelenkir's voice when he did speak, mocking even the simplest pronouncements and orders. He was a cruel man by any mortal's reckoning, but although Kelenvar did not agree with his brother's insane creed, there had always been an internal logic to his actions. In the bloody deeds he did, Kelenkir had been attempting to prove something. The sight of his brother, his arms deep inside the man's chest cavity, rose in Kelenvar's mind. The peace upon his face as he killed. This was something new. There had been anger in Kelenkir aboard the Nikton. This new serenity did not bode well. The passage sloped downward for several hundred meters, its angle becoming more extreme. The smooth stone proved treacherous, and the Night Lord slipped and cursed as they proceeded. The further they went, the steeper it became, and their progress slowed to a crawl. Kelenkir was unaffected. He strode forward as easily as he would upon level ground. Concern gripped at Kelenvar as his brother once more drew ahead, becoming a grey blot on the darkness, then a smear.
Kelenkir, he called.
His brother had discarded his vox beads.
Kelenkir!
His voice boomed from his helm grill, but there was no echo, and it dwindled far quicker than it should. Kelenkir disappeared into the dark, moving easily. Kelenvar could not match his stride and broke into a sliding jog. His feet skittered, every third step was a stumble. There was no way to see ahead. The dark was perfect and jealously hid its secrets. Not his own eyes, nor the technology of his battleplate could draw its veil aside. He would have to chance whatever pit or wall awaited him. His thoughts were only on his brother.
Headsman,
called his second.
Follow.
His reply was a snarl.
Slowly.
Kelenvar outpaced his warriors, the sound of their cursing and rasping steps fading more quickly than the dim glow of their helm lenses. Darkness enveloped him, close as a second skin.
Kelenkir!
He yelled once more. He slipped, a foot placed wrong, heel down too hard on the stone, and his legs skidded out from under him. Flailing his arms, he went down with a hard crash. The tunnel steepened further, and he slid down its shaft on his back. He put his hands out to control his descent. He thus prevented himself from going into a spin, but he could not prevent his acceleration, not entirely. Blackness yawned before him, seeming infinitely vast in scope. But it was not so. The tunnel bottomed out, and he came to a grinding halt. An alarm chimed in his helm. He cut it off. Total silence fell. A white face materialized suddenly out of the dark, demonic in aspect. A human face distorted by a diabolical lens. The chin was stretched, cheekbones exaggerated, eyes sunk in angular sockets. Large bumps, smooth as sebaceous cysts, but too regularly spaced to be so, marred the forehead. The thing's eyes were red and marbled. A black tongue licked at a lipless mouth. Kelenvar yelled and yanked his bolt pistol from his thigh. His brother looked down at him, the demon's visage gone.
Why the fuss, little Kel? What's all this about?
Kelenkir had not called him Little Kel for a long time, not since they were boys, surviving in the deep suburban wastes of Nostramo Quintus.
Kelenkir, I thought...
Kelenkir held up a finger still painted with the blood of the Sothans to his lips.
Hush, he said. I have found something.
Kelenkir reached out a hand. Kelenvar took it reluctantly and allowed himself to be hauled to his feet.
This way! Come!
They went along a curving corridor. From behind, Kelenvar heard his men reach the bottom of the slope, some arriving on their backs, as he had. He was unaccountably relieved. He no longer felt safe alone with Kelenkir. They passed a prefabricated strongpoint. The ultramarines that had manned it were all dead.
Your work?
Kelenvar asked.
Mine? No, said Kelenkir. Our brothers. Battle has swept through here.
He kicked at a scattering of shell casings and discarded power packs.
They have moved on. Others of our kind passed within meters of the heart of this place, and they did not find it.
There was a sly amusement to his voice, a secret shared.
Where have our brothers gone? Have you had any contact with them? None, said Kelenkir.
There was an idiotic sing-song quality to the way he spoke.
The vox is quiet. It is not the voice one should listen to, not down here. Come on, come, and you shall hear it as well.
Kelenkir's manner was that of an adult attempting to make light of a dangerous situation. One of those deadly games parents must sometimes play to ensure their children's survival. It brought the past to Kelenvar's mind. a time when Kellan Keir had behaved like that often, a fragment of a life so long ago it seemed like someone else's. After their ascension into the recruitment ships of the Legion and their alteration in the surgeries of the fleets, Kellan Keir's memories of mortal life had faded. Kellan Var kept more of his, but only a few. Those recollections left to Kellan Keir were mainly of their blood father, a man broken by illness and grief who drove them from their home, thereafter coming to find them only when he needed something. These appearances of their father were a harbinger of bad news, as surely as those of a nightcrow. Kellan Keir particularly remembered killing him, a deed he recounted with bitter fondness often. That was the murder that had seen them rounded up by the catch gangs and sent to the penal induction camps. It was their father who had doomed them to become night lords. That one red day aside, Kellan Keir had put much of their previous life away. For him, the Legion offered a new existence that he would not allow to be tarnished by the old. His loyalty to his blood brother alone remained. Even that had become less important to him as time had gone by, much to Kellanvar's growing sorrow. Kellanvar often contemplated why this disparity between them had arisen. Was it because of his lesser age? Maybe Kellan Keir's acts in sheltering them both had been too much for him to bear. Kellan Keir was only 2 years older than Kellanvar, but the elder had cast himself as parent and protector. Perhaps Kellan Keir's forgetting their time in the dark streets had been for his own protection. Whatever the reason, Kellanvar remembered where his brother did not. It had caused him great pain to see his sibling and guardian drift away from him. First into the embrace of the Legion's fraternity, then into the black nihilism that gripped him after Istvan. There was one night that Kellanvar remembered well. It was a rare night of boyish joy in a grim struggle for survival, a time Kellanvar held dear. Kellan Keir had run down a runty little boy, one of a gang of thieves. There had been nothing for them to eat for several days, and the boy made a welcome feast.
"Eat, eat, eat," Kellan Keir said. "There is plenty. We sleep with full bellies tonight."
Kellanvar remembered crying as he bit into the flesh, not for the fate of the boy they devoured, but for the hunger that bit at his belly. He had never tasted anything so sweet in his life. Kellan Keir's eyes glowed in the firelight.
"I'll look after you, little Kel. I always will."
Kellanvar nodded solemnly back, meat juices running down his chin, the cramps in his stomach mercifully abating. Their den was a smoky hollow pecked out of the wall of a hab tower. It was one of the great pillars of Kemno district, the base rooted in the murk far below, the spreading penthouses of the top pressed against Nostramo's rocky sky. They lived like rats, only 50 stories up from the dangers of the cavern bottoms. Close enough to the deep streets to hunt, high enough to remain concealed. There was enough room for them to sleep curled on their beds of rags, a space for their meagre belongings, room for a fire of bones and rubbish. They set it always at the back of the den. The acrid fumes hurt their noses and eyes, and lent what little food they could scavenge the taste of burnt plastic. But they dared not light it close to the tear in the building to let out smoke and light to betray them. So they endured it, exchanging the certainty of a swift death today for a slow end by inhaled poison tomorrow. It was safe in their artificial cave, safer than the home they had fled, safer than the streets. The fate of the boy they were eating testified to that. Kellan Keir smiled at his brother. The brutality of their life had already entered his soul, hardening his eyes, but his virtue had yet to flee completely, and he had been kinder then. An explosion outside had them cowering. Flashes of light made them cover their eyes and moan in terror. Gangs fought nightly in the streets. There had been a time of peace, it had been rumored, when the Night Haunter cowed the planet through righteous terror. Kellanvar naively believed all the stories and whispered to the Night Haunter in the night that he might come and save him. But these explosions were not gunshots. Faint music played between the bangs. Kellan Keir risked a look outside. He drew back quickly. Smiling widely at his brother, he beckoned him.
"Come! Look, little Kel, look!"
Kellenvar came to the hole in the wall. He trusted Kellenkir completely. The atmosphere outside was soupy with pollution, but better than that of the cave. Kellenvar coughed. His brother rubbed his back until it stopped.
Look! Look up!
Patterns of light burst in the sky, low yield, not too bright for Nostraman eyes, all blues and deep violets edging into the very far end of the visible spectrum.
What is it?
Asked Kellenvar, still afraid.
A celebration, said his brother. A lordling's naming day, perhaps. Father used to tell me about the rich folk in the upper levels. He was a server to them, you know, before the bad times.
Neither of them ever spoke of the disease that had taken their mother and broken their father's mind, turning him from parent to wreck, then finally to fiend. The music grew louder. A slender cave ship passed along between the spires of Kemno, brilliant lights of gold and blue and green flickering over the filth-crusted lower city.
Let it be known, this day the eldest son of House Skryvok takes his lord name. Let it be known. Jendor Skryvok! Jendor Skryvok! Hail! Hail! Hail!
Low-yield lasers crossed the sky. Fireworks boomed around the craft. The boys shrank back, their sensitive eyes narrowed and hands clapped over their ears. They laughed at the display still, taking pleasure in the thrill of the boom, the searing light patterns, and their own startled reactions to both. The cave ship slid on by. Images played over its long hull, showing celebrations in a place the boys would not believe existed if it were not displayed before them. A young man's face, not much older than Kellenkir, featured prominently. Kellenkir stood and reached out a hand.
Come on, let's dance, he said laughingly, and hauled his little brother to his feet.
They danced with the unself-conscious abandon of children to the music of the faraway ball, while ultraviolet stars burst all around. They laughed freely for the first time in months, safe in the knowledge the noise of the display would mask their delight. Several times in the following years, Kellenvar had brought this event up, hoping to kindle some recognition in his brother. When he was well disposed to his sibling, Kellenkir had maintained that he did remember. But when he joined in the story, it was only repetition of what he had already been told. Kellenkir's eyes told Kellenvar that he could not remember the fireworks. As Kellenvar retold his memory again and again, it lost its vitality. It permanently fixed itself, becoming a Space Marine's cast iron remembrance of a memory, rather than a mutable, living recollection. There was one detail he never shared with Kellenkir. Kellenkir revelled in the fireworks with the joy of the damned. Kellenvar's enjoyment was slightly restrained. As they danced and cackled at the noble's display, his eyes strayed to their small fire, to the delicate long bones toasting within, and the lump under the cloth on the far side. Now his hunger was sated, he could not help but think that the boy they ate might have liked the fireworks too. Kellenkir brought them to a junction with a new tunnel, and here the character of the labyrinth changed, for the tunnel had an elevated walkway of imperial make running down it. Yellow lumen balls topped posts at 50-meter intervals. Half of them were out, and the ones that glowed did so faintly, but after the midnight of the deeps, Kellenvar dimmed his helm lenses against them.
This way, said Kellenkir,
climbing up onto the walkway via a set of three broad steps. Kellenvar motioned for his space marines to follow. There was still no sign of any other Night Lords or Ultramarines. They clanked down the walkway unchallenged and isolated, hearing no footsteps but their own. They came to a place where the lumens gave out and the darkness rushed back in. A strange sense of disorientation came with it. Kellenkir did not slow and outpaced his brother. Kellenvar broke into a run after him. His perceptions became foggy. He was dizzy, and he staggered. A splayed hand thumped into Kellenvar's chest.
Come no further, said Kellenkir.
Something down here is affecting me, slurred Kellenvar.
There is, It is what I want you to see. Listen to it.
Kellenvar's eyes adjusted, and the dizziness lessened a little. There was the sense of a larger space ahead. He pulled a flare from his belt and struck it on the wall. Sullen red light burst across the room. Behind, his men caught up. They stopped at the edge of the flare's light, many of them complaining of nausea and disorientation. They were at the brink of a pit, a circle that was unnerving in its perfection. 100 meters across, he guessed, probably as deep. The walkway terminated at the lip of the pit, but there had once been a bridge there. The walkway metal was bent out of shape. Part of the structure curved over the edge, ending in a jagged edge of torn metal. A matching piece reached out from the other side.
"Down there," said Kellenkir. "Ah, secrets undreamt of, whispers in endless night. Can you hear them? The servants of Macragge know. They have not rebuilt their bridge." He laughed, a black giggle that was mostly growl. "The builders of this place wait. They wait for a time when chaos is done. Here. There are Xenos here. Kellenkir, you are insane. Mad. Mistaken," said Kellenvar.
Kellenkir tittered, wiping clumsily at the saliva spilling from his mouth. The blood on his arms smeared his face.
"They are not here. They are far, far away. This is but one of their places, a tool working away the countless millennia, waiting to be called back into service when the masters awake. Such arrogance! One cannot outwait the eternal. They will come back one day to find their scheme in tatters. Until then, their devices speak to each other, recording news of all they see. Can you hear the voices? There is wisdom in what they say."
Kellenvar shook his brother's shoulder.
"Come on! Stop this madness! I can hear nothing!"
He looked back at his warriors, aware that they heard every insane word.
"That is because you do not listen, brother! You never have! Do you think that they know what they have here, the self-righteous lords of Ultramar? I do not think they do. They lack the imagination to grasp it."
He smiled wolfishly, the widest smile Kellenvar had ever seen on his face. It was, in all respects, wrong.
"We have imagination, though, hey, little Kell?" "Yes," said Kellenvar warily. "Yes, we do." "Which way now?" he asked. "Where are the Ultramarines?"
Kellenkir made no indication he heard his brother, but stood at the edge of the broken bridge, his head to one side, listening to something only he could hear.
"Brother," said Kellenvar.
Again, that same inhuman smile split his brother's features, and Kellenvar thought he heard two voices answering, not one.
"Back there, they have gone to the roots of Sotha. We go back. Then we go deeper."